It's time to get organized this new year with Menards. Update your closet system and add style today with Closet Culture. Choose from two closet finishes and four colors of shelf boards to create a functional yet stylish closet solution that matches your home decor. Check out all our Closet Culture closet kits or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com to see all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
No more online shopping for me.
Locked in the bunker, shadow shake. One man clapping secrets awake. Board games living, dice they break. Echoes pound and hearts they quake.
Welcome to the sound of one man clapping. I am the one man coming to you direct from the bunker. It is Sunday evening, not the morning. The sun is not shining. The sun is set and life is good. I had a busy day. Shea Hamas this fine Sunday. We had a bushwalk. We had a birthday party to get a little peanut to and from. You know, and stuff. Today, we're going to go through all the games that were. We're going to traipse through my love affair with crowdfunding in FOMO Mofo. And we're going to spend some time with the voices in my head with a cautionary tale. One with a happy ending. Not that kind of happy ending, but a happy ending nonetheless. On with the show. I have a good week every week. This week was a good week because I played more board games than last week. I have had a wonderful time with some new games I've not played, some games I have played, some games I've been dying to play. So let's kick it off. First, I played a game on one of the Thursday nights with the fine Super Trooper himself of Undaunted 2200 Callisto. Now, I bought Undaunted 2200 Callisto. I pre-ordered it as soon as it was released because while I've liked the idea of the Undaunted system, war era gaming, just it doesn't grab me. I know some people are mad for it, like absolutely mad for it. People who love war gaming are absolutely mad for it. I've never been one for, you know, the Memoir 44s or Undaunted Stalingrad, but I love me some outer space. And so I bought Undaunted 2200. It's been sitting on my shelf of firsts for a very long time. And so finally, Super Trooper was coming over. He's like, what are we going to play? I'm like, dude, I need you to teach me how to play Undaunted so that I can crack into the solo. Because the solo looks great. It's a, you know, medium to heavy complicated bot to run the opponent. And so Undaunted 2200 Callisto, this was my first Undaunted experience. Of course, Undaunted is by David Thompson and Trevor Benjamin. The art of this particular one is by Roland McDonald and is published by Osprey. So in Undaunted, it's basically a deck builder. You know, you're playing factions and your factions each have a dual market of cards. You have two teams, basically, two platoons that you're managing through the game. And the cards that you will build into your deck basically will build into one of those two platoons in Undaunted 2200. So you might bring a survey tech in for platoon B or platoon C. But of course, the card that you've played will allow you to bring those cards in. So from the beginning, if you haven't played Undaunted, basically what's going to happen is you're going to draw four cards. And each of you and your opponent, you're going to play one face down. This is your initiative card. And the cards have an initiative value on them. Highest number wins. And then you're going to flip those cards. And the person who has the highest initiative will go first. Obviously, the cards that are more powerful have a higher initiative. So the painful trade-off is always like, do I want to use this card for its great abilities, or do I need to burn this card for the initiative? And it's a very painful decision. That's got a lot of spice in it. It's really quite nice. And then from there, you're going to play your cards, and cards are multi-use. You know, there'll be a number of different things that each card can do, whether that's scouting ahead, and because you can't move into spaces that have been scouted, or taking control of a place, because taking control of a place is usually one of the goals you have in your scenario. Attacking is rolling dice, and the attacking is really quite good in Undaunted 2200. Even though it's dice, you basically are rolling a d10, and there is an armor number on each unit. So if that armor number is 4, you've got to roll a 4 or higher. If you are 2 spaces away, you've got to roll a 6 or higher. if they are on elevated ground, if you're taking someone on elevated ground, you only get to roll a D8. And if you are on elevated ground, you get to roll a D12. So there's a really nice decision space in there about, well, do I want to chance an attack? There's no rerolls, right? There's nothing in here that goes, hey, you can mitigate dice. You mitigate dice through your planning, right? You're going to get one roll, and sometimes you might be rolling one or two or three dice, so you've got a better opportunity to get what you need. There's no rerolling. So your mitigation is, well, excuse me, I'm going to creep a little closer first so that I only have to roll a 5 on a D12 or a D10 versus a 6 or a 7. Or do I wait and attack someone else? You have another action that's not attack. It's called suppress. And I've got to be honest, I watched a training video, watched a how to play video before I played with Super Trooper, and I saw the suppress. I'm like, well, why would you bother to suppress someone if you can attack them? Well, I'll tell you why. Because when you attack someone, you don't outright kill a unit. What you do is you remove one of your opponent's cards to manage that unit. And they might have 3 or 4 cards in their deck. So to take a unit off the board, you might have to attack it 3 or 4 times. Enter suppression. Suppression flips the unit upside down to the other side of the token. So when you suppress a unit, basically the next time your opponent plays that card does nothing except bring that unit back into active duty. And so suppression is uber powerful because, attacking someone, getting a card out of the deck, that's great. That's a powerful move. Suppress them makes them burn an entire turn, which is just such a dick move in the greatest possible way. Right, so I played the first game. I got to the end of my first game with Super Trooper. Obviously, he cleaned the table with me, as you expect he would. He's played Undaunted a few times. But I came out the end of it going, aha, I got it. I can see the Matrix now. I can understand the value of suppressing versus attacking and why you would choose. Undaunted 2200 has mechs. It's got big, stompy mech standees. There's a huge, boring drill a la Total Recall kind of style that one of the factions can sort of get climb around in and take cover behind. I'm only just getting started with this. So I played the one game. It actually is sitting on the table in the bunker right now, set up for a solo. I'm hopeful maybe I'll get through a few rounds of the solo after I record tonight. I probably won't edit tonight, just fair warning. Not that you're going to get this warning until you get the episode, but I like to think that this is a direct pipeline into your brains. I probably will edit this after work tomorrow, so you'll get your episode a day late this week, but I think we're all going to be okay. That's Undaunted 2200. So far, I like what I see. So it's a really nicely produced set of boards. It's a simple system. It's a simple system with a lot of, grinding teeth of machinations in there to bring it all together. Played another game of Five Tribes. I've talked about Five Tribes ad infinitum on the podcast. I am fast thinking of Five Tribes as easily one of my top 20 games. I think with more plays and more plays, it might creep up a little more. It is so easy to table. It is so easy to play. It is crunchy as fuck. And Five Tribes is great. I've talked about Five Tribes a lot. I'm not going to bore you to death. But I do check out Five Tribes. It's an older game. From memory, it was published in 2014. It's by Bruno Cathala. Are by Clément Masson, published by Days of Wonder. It's basically a Mancala-style game. You're going to pick up all the meeples and drop them on adjacent tiles and then do something on the last tile you land on. And you're trying not to paint yourself in a corner because if you can run out of legal moves pretty quickly. So, yeah, we play Five Tribes. But we also played, and we got in some new games. There are a couple of new games, Undaunted being one of them. We played a game of Nunatak Temple of Ice. Now, I had never heard of Nunatak. I had visions when the title was told to me of basically zombies spilling out of a convent. I didn't know what to expect. So it's Nunatak Temple of Ice. And basically Nunatak is a game of, I don't know, what do you want to call it? You're building this gigantic temple together in the middle of the table. And it's kind of, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. So Nunatak you start off with a flat board. And you're going to put these gigantic, they're pretty chunky, plastic ice blocks out. And once 4 ice blocks are formed, then another layer, if they're formed in a square, then there's another layer gets slotted on top of those ice blocks to build this thing upwards. And then you're going to keep building. You get points. There's a number of points in this. Sorry, guys. I'm not gonna be able to do this justice. There's a number of ways you get points. Let's just go with that. And they include finishing off the fourth pillar on a stack upwards. They include completing a row. If you complete a row, you're going to get some extra multipliers on your points at the end of the game. There are these lovely little goals that you can grab, because where you place these, where you place these little ice blocks is determined by a card you take from the card market. And that card market will have a symbol on it, and you need to find a matching symbol on the board. You drop your ice block out. And then these cards have a little sort of Seventh Wonders thing going on of set collection for the end of the game. You get points for having sets of them. You get points for having multiples of the same. And there's all kinds of interwoven things. It's a crunchy little, what the hell am I supposed to do with this? I can't do anything with this. Oh, well, I'm going to have to do anything anyway. And when it's finished, it's a delightful table presence. I had never heard of Nunatak. It was 10 minutes to learn. It was about a 45-minute game, and I had an absolute blast. I would have happily torn it down and played it immediately again. It is by somebody called Kane Klenko, who's clearly a Marvel supervillain, or maybe a hero. I don't know. Never heard of Kane Klenko. And art by Quanchai Moria, and published by Cosmos. Nunatak is a blast. I had never played it before. If it wasn't already existing in our group, if I was out at a con or something, I'd be like, guys, one of us needs to buy this game. One of us needs to put this in our collection, because Nunatak was a blast. If you've played Babylon, which is a very sort of Calico in 3D, the Hanging Gardens of Babylon, it's kind of like Babylon Light. And that's Nunatak. We got another game of Ruins. Ruins is getting high rotation because I'm really enjoying Ruins. Ruins is the card crafting game, I should say, by John D. Clare. Art's by Jake Morrison, published by Allplay. And Ruins is an absolute blast. It is a brain-burning blast of swearing and what the fruitcakes. And I think I discovered we've been playing a rule wrong. So that's exciting because, you know, we've been playing the past rule wrong, which means it's actually got even a little more tactical meat on its bones with regards to the tactical pass. Ruins I've talked about a number of times over the preceding weeks, and I don't want to bore you to death, but just on a quick one, you're going to have a hand of cards, and it's basically a trick-taking-esque card shedding. You don't get any points for tricks. You're just trying to shed cards. So if you're leading, you're going to play a card or a pair of cards or a three of a kind or a four of a kind of a number. And so if I play three twos, the next person has to play three twos or higher, as in it's got to be three of a kind, and it's got to match or beat it. And if they match it exactly, it skips the next person Uno style, which is a marvelous little screw you if you can pull that off. If they can't play, they pass, and off it goes round and round until, you know, the order's finished. The last person who plays leads the next hand. It's fine at the start. You're like, oh, this is fine, I get it. But then the spicy bits are, you can actually, all these cards are in big chunky sleeves, and you can value add to these cards. You can add special superpowers to them. You can change the value of the card. So in my hand, if I have a 3 and a 7, there's an opportunity in the market. There's a +4 sort of clear transparent overlay. Well, I can buy that +4, slide it in. All of a sudden, I've got a 7 and a 7, and I can play those. That's it in a nutshell. But don't underestimate how much fire it causes in your frontal lobe. I really like Ruins. I always look forward. I've had Ruins in my collection for, I think, 6 weeks. We've played it 3 or 4 times. And I'm going to be looking forward to getting it to the table another half dozen times in the coming and in intervening weeks, because I think it's exceptional. That's Ruins. As I said, I had a good week, guys. Played a game of Ra. Ra has been around for 12.6 millennia. It's by Rana Knizia. This is the Pharaoh's edition that Super Trooper has, with art by Ian O'Toole. It's the Uber Chonk edition. I couldn't work out and discover who actually published that. I know it was in Kickstarter about 4 years ago, and there's been a reprint since. I tried. I tried for 5 or 6 minutes, and I gave up because I can't. When you type RA into Board Game Geek, you get Raw from 1989, and then anything with an RA in it. So Raw's a classic auction game. I think Raw is fine, and this is a hot take in our gaming group because I know it's a madly loved game. I think Raw is fine. I don't think there's anything wrong with Raw. I will play Raw. I probably would never request Raw. I will happily play Raw. You're drawing something out of a bag, you're adding it to a market. That's it. And then when it comes around your turn, you look at the market and you go, well, do I want to start an auction for that market, or do I want to draw something else and add to the market? You could add something bad to the market. There are bad tiles in there. Sometimes when you draw a tile, it forces an auction. There's a lovely little head game because you've got three values of bids on your board, and they are all different values, and you might have a 2 and a 9 and a 15, and something you got to do something with the 2. And so there's a lovely little head game there. And I don't dislike Ra. Don't get me wrong. I think Ra is fine. I know Ra's got a mad following. And again, in our player group, our core player group, Ra is very popular. Ra's fine. I like Ra. If I had my pick, I would play Skyrise over Ra. I think it tickles me just a little bit more, Skyrise. It's a very different, you know, game. It's still an auction game. There's still a head game based on the values you have to bid against what else is out on the table. But yep, played Ra. I won Ra, and it was funny. We did scoring. And I'm like, yeah, I think I've got 32, and then everyone scored, and it's all packed away. And I went, oh wait, I actually have 41. Sorry. Yeah, dick move. But it was funny. That's what the fox usually does when she plays. She just looks down at the end of the game and goes, oh, did I win? So I got accused of pulling a fox move. It was fun. It was great. As I said, I enjoy Ra. Ra's been around a long time. It's an evergreen game. Ra's going to be around forever. Ra's a game that is going to stand the test of time because new gamers will discover it all the time and it will just keep getting pumped out, which is great for Ra. Great for gamers too. Played a game, something a little bit chunkier, of Scarface 1920. Now, Super Trooper has Scarface 1920, the Uber edition. I think, from memory, this was Tom Vassell's most overproduced game. Or no, not overproduced. Best production of 2023. And it's great. It's really cool. You've got mobsters and rum-running trucks and little roadster cars to get people around. It's got area control. It's got a little bit of combat. It's card play. It's a very tight card play. You draw three cards and you get to do one fucking action with the three cards. It is so painful. Painful in a great way. It's so painful. You got three cards in your hand, and with those cards, there are literally 9 different things you might be able to do, but you get to do one thing. And there's a little push your luck in that you can play 2 cards. If you want to play more than 2 cards, you can take a little bit of infamy, which makes things really bad for you when there's a raid, the higher your infamy is. But sometimes it's worth taking that infamy to pump some more cards on the table. Scarface, I think we've played it at 2, we've played it at 3, and I think the next time I play it, I want to play it at 4. Scarface can be a little turtly. You know, there were two of us on one side of the map, and I was on the other side of the map, and really didn't have a lot of interaction until sort of very late game. And I was playing a new mob boss, because your mob bosses all have asymmetrical sort of capabilities. And the mob boss I was playing, I realized at about the halfway mark of the game that I was going to run out of actual actions unless I got all up in everyone else's business. Because the mob boss I had in particular really benefited from having people out on the board where they shouldn't be, where they didn't really belong. And so, you know, try to get them out sort of, you know, by the time you get to the 3-quarter game, and by then it was too late, which is fine. I still have fun. I love Prohibition era stuff. I cannot wait for Speakeasy to deliver. Boardwalk Empire was one of my favorite TV series of all time. I love Prohibition era stuff, you know, Al Capone mythos. I know he's not a mythos, but he kind of is now and all that sort of bit. Scarface 1920 is great. It's very swingy. You know, you get scores of, you know, 183 to 65, because there's, you know, that's just the game. And it is literally fuck you the game. You know, there are some card combinations in there that are meaningfully broken, but it's like playing Marco Polo, where all the leader powers are all game breaking leader powers. Scarface 1920, there's a lot of broken cards in there. I want to say broken, that's the game. I don't think they should be fixed. I'm not saying the game is broken. I'm saying there are some game-breaking cards in there that just take the table and Monopoly flip it into orbit around Venus. I really enjoy Scarface 1920. I think it's a blast. I think it's painful in all the right ways. You know, every turn you draw your 3 cards, and if you increase your hand limit, your 4 and 5 cards, and you look at them, and every single turn you're like, there are 5 things I need to do. And you get to 1. And it comes back around to you quick enough, but you got new cards in your hand. And so it's also quite tactical in that regard. You can pre-plan a move and a half ahead because your hand limit starts at 3 and you can play 2 cards. So you can go, well, I'm saving this card for next turn, but you have no idea what it's going to be paired with. I think Scarface 1920 is a very good game. It is very swingy. It is subject to all kinds of random stuff based on your card draw, based on the cards in the market, based on, you know, whatever. It's fun. It's super fun. It's not Cthulhu Death May Die random, or, you know, there's no dice, but it might as well have dice. I think Super Trooper called it the dice game with no dice, you know. Oh no, that was the next game we played. Sorry. That was the next game we played. Although Scarface 1920 does feel like it's got dice with these cards. Super fun. Tony. Oh, sorry guys. Tony. Sarah Desenfirm. Herskafirm. Can I buy a vowel? Daniel Simon. Art by Antonio Steppertz. And published by Redson Games. Great fun. And after that, we played a game that has been offered to me to play many times over the last few years since it came out. It's one that I looked at online. I looked at, do I buy this game? It looks like it could be fun. In the gameplay, the game looks terrible. Like, it really does. It's not smartphone terrible, but hang on. Let's not bury the lead. It's Beyond the Sun. We play Beyond the Sun with the leaders in the New Dawn. Okay, and you're going to be sitting there and go, shut your corny whore mouth, James. That is a great game. Okay, yeah, 100%. It's a great game. I really, really enjoyed Beyond the Sun. Don't get me wrong. It looks like trash. It looks like trash. And that's my problem, right? And I know that I have a bias. I've talked about this regularly. I know I have a bias when it comes to games that are pretty, games that look good, games that have all their teeth. I know I have bias for that sort of thing. And I can try and fight that bias. But the reality is, I am not a solo board gamer exclusively, but I do play a lot of solo. And I was saying to the guys at the table, you know, that it's easy to misjudge, but layer a judgment on games like Beyond the Sun and Smartphone Inc. Because the table presence when you play a solo game is really important. I need that immersion. I need to be sucked in. I need a tactility. I don't necessarily need to have a toyetic factor. Toys are nice. I like toys. Don't get me wrong. I like toys. I have Lego in the bunker. I have 3 Lego Batmobiles in the bunker, and I freaking love them. I have 5 technically, but there are only 3 that are put together. I like toys, but I love that beautiful game presence. And I think if Beyond the Sun just did a little more with the gate, the card backs are boring as fuck. The board is, it's basically a flowchart from one side to the next. Your worker placement, of which you have 1 worker, is a hexagonal column in the color of your choice. Your player boards are white, entirely white with text on them. And I'm like, bro, this game takes place 300 years in the future. We have interstellar travel, but we don't have color? Okay, all that aside, right? Beyond the Sun is great. It was great to play. I would happily play it anytime. Our dear friend who owns Voldemort, who shall not be named, who owns Beyond the Sun, also plays a lot of solo like I do, and he said the solo is actually pretty sucky. He doesn't recommend the solo. And so there's no point in adding it to a collection if I can't, you know, I'll just play it with the boys and girls in our group. But Beyond the Sun, basically it's a worker placement game. You have 1 worker. You know, put the worker out, you can do a thing. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to advance technology. You're trying to advance technology on the main board and get further down the technologies. And so to invent level 2 technologies, you need a certain number of level 1s. To invent level 3 technologies, you need a certain number of level 2s. And then on a sideboard, you've got this interstellar sort of area majority game going on where you're launching ships and you're sending them out to planets and you're colonizing those planets. Those planets are ostensibly cards on this board. There's 4 of them. They have a minimum requirement to be on to colonize them. And you have to be on it. You have to have the majority. You have to have more than anyone else. And then you have to take a turn to colonize. And if you do, you snag that card. It goes into your little tableau and it has endgame scoring. And it has a few bennies when you score it. Beyond the Sun was fantastic. Leaders of the New Dawn, I don't know what it adds other than more factions, because every faction's got some asymmetry. We played Leaders of the New Dawn. We played, you know, complicated factions. I'd never played before. I had no problem, you know, picking up the game as it was with the Leaders of the New Dawn, and thoroughly enjoyed it. Beyond the Sun is by Dennis K. Chan, art by Franz Vo Winkle, and published by Rio Grande Games. And as I said earlier, I have Undaunted sitting on my table, hoping to get to that maybe tonight once I'm finished recording, maybe tomorrow. I can. That's a beautiful thing about having a bunker. I can come, play half a game, go back tomorrow, play half a game. I know we've got Thursday night gaming in the books. Saturday is Super Troopers' annual Schnocktoberfest, which is basically fried chicken, all-you-can-eat fried chicken, and board games all day. And I think, if I heard correctly, we're going to be playing Battlestar Galactica, which is something we try to play once a year. We didn't get it in last year, so we're going to be playing Battlestar Galactica. And then Sunday, I got an ATO day night in the books this coming Sunday. So it's going to be a superb week. And some good stuff might be delivering as well. So happy days. That's the games that were. Welcome to FOMO Mofo, where I take you through my personal angst-ridden journey of capitalist acquisitionism. As always, this is not, well, not as always, we did it differently last week. My apologies for the outright lie, but as per usual, this is not an exhaustive list of crowdfunding projects, but merely those that have my personal attention, either because they are by a design and development team that I like, a theme that I enjoy, or because they have pretty toys. Sometimes, when the stars align and the planets align and my wallet is full, it's all three. It's raining games! Oh man, let me tell you. Whew! What a time to have a board game account full of money. All right, it is October next week. It's October this coming week. It's Sunday. It's October on Tuesday or Wednesday or some shit. It's October. Fucking October. Oh my God. You know, it's like you start the countdown to Christmas now. It's October this week. And as per last year and the year before, it is a bonanza of crowdfunding. There are, you want games? You want games? I don't care if you don't want games. You don't want games? Tough shit. There are games. There's games everywhere. You better buy games. You need games. You don't need games? Don't even open your mouth if you don't need games. It is crowdfunding season. It is FOMO season. Eek. Let's start kicking off with Container. Container has been published a number of times over the years. It has been out of print for, I think, 6 years or something. Container is basically a double-blind economy game where each of us has our own microeconomy that we are setting the values for and buying and selling from each other. And then we are sending our stuff off to a central market for huzzah points. It's not that complicated, but man, it looks spicy as fuck. Right, and Container will be a game that has probably been on almost nobody's radar. People are like, what? Container? Container was released in like 2007. Why are we getting a Container reprint? Because Container looks fantastic. Container was not on my radar. Obviously, you know, my whole social media feed, the algorithm just goes, hey, James, you want board games? Here's board games. You want board game content? Here's content. You want accessories? Here's accessories. Normally, your social media algorithm can be really awful. It's like, I heard you talking about asthma the other day. Here's some asthma puffers. I'm like, get fucked. No, all I talk about is board games. So guess what? My whole algorithm is board games. And so Container pops up and all kinds of stuff pops up. I was talking to somebody today. They're like, wow, you must spend a lot of time doing research. I'm like, you know what? Research just does itself because it's something I love. It just falls in my lap. I read stuff and I absorb it all day. I watch videos in the evening. It's a thing. You know, it's a peaceful life. So Container. Container is out by Allplay. Allplay is absolutely setting themselves front and center as one of the publishers who is just kicking goal after goal after goal. Small games, they're killing the small game space. They're absolutely killing the small box game space right now. The last thing I backed from Allplay was Twinkle Twinkle Waddle and Merchants of Andromeda. I haven't played Merchants of Andromeda yet, but the other two are absolute thumbs up for me. They have all kinds of things launching. Container forms part of a 3-game campaign on Kickstarter. I looked at the other two games. I have zero interest in the other two games, but I think it's clever bundling Container up with two other inexpensive games because it makes the price for an all-in seem really reasonable, because Container, the base game is $60, right? It's great. Very reasonable. If you want the deluxe version, it's another $90 Australian. So $60 Australian for the base game, $150 for the deluxe version. The deluxe version has enamel metal freight ships and enamel metal containers, like shipping containers. Yeah. Yes, please. Right? Like, okay, you want to charge me $90 for some of these upgrades? Okay, like, I would like to spit on it first, because that's really quite aggressive. But, yeah? Yeah, let's do this, baby. But they bundle up two other games with it. Two other games with it that are not expensive. I think if you buy them separately, they're like 16 and 18 bucks. But they bundle all three up, and they're able to offer a price to go, oh, that's worth three games. And I understand why they've done it. It's a really clever piece of marketing. The other thing they've done is this whole thing has basically flat rate shipping. I think it was $21 Australian for shipping. On my notes here, I've missed a number, so I'm guessing. I think it was $21. It was 14% if you get the deluxe version. And it's at $21 whether you buy Container, whether you buy Container and three other games, whether you buy five copies of Container. It's $21 shipping, which is really smart. It's a really smart way to market and bundle this stuff up. I think Container looks great. I'm not going to try and pretend to do it justice because I understand how the game works. I understand the gameplay. I am attracted to the gameplay. It's not just the chunky little metal containers. It's partly the chunky little metal containers, but no, just partly. It's kind of like the metal cubes for Clank. Clank's a great game. The metal cubes are so sexy. Those little metal containers, I can almost feel the weight in my hand. They just feel like weaponized little containers. So yes, Container is great. Looks great. It's out. It's out for a little while yet. It's on Kickstarter. Up alongside that on Kickstarter, we have the charming little, I'll say little, it's $180 Australian, a Calypso with a K. So Calypso with a K is basically a game, it's a tile layer, and it's basically a game, I believe its whole theme is actually post-apocalyptic. We are all toast. The oceans are full of garbage. It's a little water worldy. We're whisking through the ocean and we're picking up we're salvaging rubber, we're salvaging bits of steel, and we're using that to lay these tiles out. It's a tiling game. It's a very pretty tiling game. And the tiles are all a 3x2 T-shape. Three across the top, two down. So it's basically three in each direction T-shape. They're all the same, which makes planning okay. You know, it's not like when you're playing My Island or you're playing something that's got all these different tile shapes where you're like, shit, well, how am I going to put this Z in there? I can't be fucked. So they're all T's, and you lay them out, and if you cluster certain things, you get to combo. So if you put four bits of rubber together, you get to build a raft on top of that. So another square tile comes out, you build on top, combo-tastic, huzzah, points, points, points. If you can block in an area that's got fish, you get to flip little fish tokens for points. There's all kinds of little combo-tastic things on there. And while it's kind of diminished the board color in the prototypes, they've got this flocking on these boards because they're not dual-layered or triple-layered. They're basically a single board. But they've got this flocking on them, and they've got the same flocking on the backs and tops of these tiles. And so when you put them down, you can actually pick the board up and tip it, and they don't slide off. Because this kind of game, like the original Ark Nova, could suffer very easily from the sleeve of death. Well, there's no sleeve of death because this stuff looks like it sticks really well. They got a couple of videos of picking these things up and tipping them around, and everything stays in place. It's very pretty to look at. The deluxe version is $180. Now, the last couple of episodes, I've been going, oh, $180. I think I'm coming to the realization that $180 is the new $130, guys. You know, I'll be looking very closely at what the new Eagle Griffin Lacerda game's priced at, because that normally hits me and stings me for $180, $175. I don't know if I'll be backing this one. That's not what I'm saying. This is The Great Library, which guaranteed is going to go live in November, because that's their sort of cycle. They do a Lacerda campaign in November. I'll be looking at the price of that as sort of a metric for resetting. If that comes out and it's like, well, it's $205 now, I'll go, right, okay, fair play. $180 is no longer what it used to be. And I know it's not what it used to be, but I look at a game like Calypso, which is, you know, it's not light. I'll call it a light little tile layer with combo-tastic bits, and it's $180. And I go, oh, I mean, shipping's another $42. So I don't know how heavy this game is. It doesn't look like, I mean, heavy as in kilograms and pounds. It's 23%. So really 23%, I'm okay with 23% shipping. That's kind of in a wheelhouse where I'm comfortable. It's the price of Calypso that I kind of, not so much balk at, but I kind of go, oh man, that feels like it stings more than it should. Anyway, we'll keep an eye on it. We'll see. We'll see what happens. It looks really great. And they've got, you know, obviously they've got little acrylic ships and little 3D life preservers and floating barrels and stuff. And they're all Kickstarter exclusives. You want FOMO? There's FOMO there for you. There's FOMO there for you. This looks like something that there's a solo version, there's a competitive version, and there's a co-op version where you stick all your four maps together and you got this huge Uber ocean, which is cool. It looks really nice. Calypso looks good. Check it out. Detective City of Angels is up with new crimes for pre-order on GameFound. It's not a crowdfunding campaign. It is clearly a pre-order. I only played Detective City of Angels the first time a few weeks ago. It was only the introductory case. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought the gameplay loop was excellent. I thought the way your game master has skin in the game and that they're trying to sort of... They can't outright break the rules, but they can give you dodgy information on purpose. And it's dodgy information that's quite clear. They can't just make shit up. Because if they can prevent you from solving the case, they win. You know, often you have these people have to game master a game. There's an opportunity for them to meaningfully win. I like that about this. I would really like to see, you know, another tabling of Detective City of Angels. I won't be buying this. I won't be backing this. It's not backing buying because I don't own Detective City of Angels. Super Trooper owns Detective City of Angels. But it looks good. More crimes to solve. What's the other one? There's another crime-solving one that's coming next month. Can't remember. It's been around for ages. New crimes. Watch this space. We'll be talking about that soon, I'm sure. I'll be looking at that because that's stuff that you can play both solo or I can play with a peanut. It's app-assisted and it looks really cool. But Detective City of Angels, I can't talk you through pricing structure because it's basically like a whole web store on GameFound. You can buy different bits. You can buy new screens. You can buy two or three different new mysteries and blah, 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 blah. But it's out. It's there. It's by Van Ryder Games of Final Girl fame. So kudos to Van Ryder. They seem to be doing really well. And Detective City of Angels. Go have a look. Or don't. Dogs of War by Paolo More is getting a refurbishment. I would call it a reprint, but it's a refurbishment. It's almost a version 2.0 or 3.0, whatever they're up to. It's got a little bit of a rewrite on the rules. It's got new artwork. And it looks like it's being published by Shut Up and Sit Down. They have started actually running their own looks, guys. I believe I'm reading this correctly. Shut Up and Sit Down are actually behind this. They have a little introductory video, and one of the things that one of the things I can respect is that they've got a little blurb from them going, this game is great, buy this game. But then they've got a lot of other third-party stuff. They haven't just flooded it with their own recommendations and their own videos. They've got one little bit from them, and I think they've tried to be quite transparent in it, it seems. I don't have an opinion on influencers getting involved with this sort of stuff. It's not doing particularly well, and I don't know if that's because Dogs of War just doesn't have the market that they're hoping for. It's not very expensive. I think it's the game is $75 Australian. Here it is, $75 Australian. There's an upgraded version you can buy, but the upgraded version really is just throwing more money at the campaign, and I think it gives you a $15 voucher for use later. So there's no real deluxe version. The base game looks fine. Shipping's $22, which is 29%. It's a three-player game at its lowest player count. And so that's a tough one, I think. I think games that you can't table unless you've got three players are a tough one to sell. They're a tough one to sell because I think two-player is where most households would be looking at. Certainly three and four and five-player exists. And most of the games I play, they're either in that two or three player space. There's no meaningful way you can play it two player. It's basically a area control skirmishy. It's not skirmishy, but it's an area control sort of dominance game. You can't play that with two players. But look, have a look. If you like Dogs of War, it's got new art. It's got a few mechanics are tweaked. Paolo Mori's got some really great chops when it comes to game design. And it's there for a couple of weeks. And last one for me, following on from last week's episode where I talked at length, I waxed lyrical, if you will, about my sort of epiphany when it comes to backing games and how I'm addicted to the big, beautiful campaigns and the big boxes and the glorious artwork and the chonky stuff and the metal bits and the more. I just went back through all the stuff that I've been following and I have late pledged for Light in the Dark. So Light in the Dark is a I'll say little. It's actually sort of not so much a little box anymore. It's not like a Buttons and Bugs box or a 20 Strong box. It's kind of a, it's a smallish box, but it's a little, it's not even Dungeon Crawler. It's like a little, it's a Dungeon Crawler game. There's no dungeon. You're crawling through the countryside and you're slaying bandits. You're chopping wolves in half. And it's got a little deluxe bit to it. This is by Arcona Games, who did Pest, Philharmonics. Their most recent campaign was The Great Harbor. They've been around a while. They're an indie little publisher from Macedonia. I've had a couple of online chats with Milan and the team. Lovely guys, really around and able to answer very weird edge case questions. And so I've gone back and I've dumped some money in there because I want to be making sure that these little boutique things are getting a little bit of my money. Now, Light in the Dark, I didn't back it, largely because I thought, I don't know if it's for me. Well, guess what? I spend a reasonable amount of time traveling for work. And I'm getting a little tired of Buttons and Bugs and 20 Strong. I'm not tired of them. Don't get me wrong. Those are great games. But they're my go-tos for travel. You know, they're easy to throw in the suitcase. They're easy to pull out wherever I am. And I would like to get some stuff that's in rotation. Obviously, 20 Strong is coming out with five new decks shortly. And that's going to be great because it's a great little game system. And it's very, once you know the game system, it's easy to pick up the new rules for the new variants. So yeah, I've late pledged for Light in the Dark and the expansion and, because little guys deserve our attention. That's it for FOMO Mofo for this week. Well, okay. Look, coming soon. I can't help myself. Coming soon, there's some campaigns coming that I'm very interested in. Don't Starve launches next week. It looks like it's coming in a mini and an acrylic standee version. This would be the first one, if I go in, that I'll be really gagging for the acrylic standee, because those little acrylic standees seem to really mirror the artwork from the video game beautifully. So I'll be looking at Don't Starve next week. Below the Asylum is launching in October by Awakened Realms on GameFound. Now, Below the Asylum is this grimdark horror. The artwork looks great and the board looks great, and I just hope the gameplay is great. This is actually by Thomas Hollick. It's funny. Thomas Hollick, it's not funny. It's interesting. Thomas Hollick, who brought us last year SETI and Galileo Galilei, has been working on this one since early 2024, which doesn't sound like a long time to be working on a big whiz bang game, but I read some of the diary notes of the designer diaries, and this is something it's been in the back of his head for ages, and I get that. You know, being a chef, I could have entire dishes in the back of my head for 5 years before I decide to really workshop them and bring them to life, and some of them have been absolute showstoppers because it's just been cooking away on the back burner, and your brain kind of does that. It looks really good on the table. It's like, oh, it looks really good. This is going to be Awakened Realms' next big whiz-bang project in October. And I will be looking very closely at that. I'm not lacking for big whiz-bang projects on my shelves. But, you know, whatevs. I got space. I'm a grown-up. Don't judge me. Or judge me. I don't care. I'll still sleep at night. And then Ivy Studios has been teasing for the last week, 10 days. They've got a new game. It is a co-op deck builder called Honor's End. Now, Honor's End looks really good. It looks like, it gives me Regicide vibes, but with more meat. And looking at the gameplay, this is, again, it's sort of a smallish size box that I could easily throw in my bag for traveling for work. And the solo looks really good. Because the solo is just the gameplay. It's a co-op game. So if you're playing solo, you've got a special deck of cards you can draw on as assistance cards. They're like the squire cards. And they sort of, I guess, value add to the table instead of having other people. Ivy Studios hasn't published a ton of things that I've been overly interested in the past. Their stuff's, for me, just not been in my wheelhouse, with the exception of their last campaign, which was Scales of Fate. I did back because I think it looks spectacular. Scales of Fate, Pillars of Fate, the two games in one campaign. But this one has got my attention. The gameplay, as I said, it gives me Regicide vibes. You're basically cycling through three individual back-to-back combats, and you know it's a game of attrition. You don't reset in between. Your resources, as they were, whether they're health or exhaustion or whatever they are, there's no reset in between those three battles. So you've got to try and be really efficient and bring those to life. And I'm looking forward to seeing and learning more about Honor's End. That's it now. That'll do it. This week on Voices in My Head, I want to share a cautionary tale. Cautionary for me. As you guys know, I treat my sessions at the microphone with you guys. This is my own personal therapy session, so thank you for taking notes and making sure that I get through the next day, next week. Saturday, for me, I have a ritual on Saturday. Well, it's a semi-flexible ritual, but I am not a particularly heavy drinker. I being in hospitality, I went through years and years of being quite hard on my liver, shall we say. And these days, I try to limit it to Saturday night. Sometimes if I'm celebrating or if I just feel like I might have one alcoholic beverage on a Wednesday, but Saturday night's my night, I crack open a bottle of wine. And it's not unheard of for that bottle of wine to lead seamlessly into a second bottle of wine. It's nice. It's nice. I'm like 6'4" and 250 pounds in freedom units, guys. And two bottles of wine I have a great time on two bottles of wine. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, I'm not doing myself any long-term damage, which is nice. But I do have a hard and fast rule on Saturday nights. And this comes from many years of borderline whoopses and genuine whoopses. And that is this. There is no online shopping on Saturday night, Hammers. There is no, repeat after me, there is no online shopping on Saturday night. Because after a bottle and a half of really nice Shiraz, I make really bad fucking decisions. So, entered 2 weeks ago. And I'd had a bottle of red, and I thought, well, you know, I'm gonna have a Hennessy after that, because I'm quite fond of a Hennessy. Being half douchebag, I like a cognac, and then I just popped the phone open. And I'm like, you know what? I haven't reviewed it in a while, but I do spend a lot of time, of my personal time, just trolling and reading back the top 200 solo games each year. Right, there's a big thing that happens every year. It happens right around October, November. And there's a guy who, off his own back, does it. And I think he said last year's the last year he's going to do it, which is a shame because he does a great job of it. But you can vote for your top solo games. And it's a weighted vote. And then he weighs those all up. He puts a weighting on them. And he spits out the top 200 solo games. And, you know, it's kind of my Bible. I'm like, well, that's how I bought my first 20 games, was off the top 200 solo games. And to be honest, I own quite a lot of the top 200 solo games because I play a lot of solo. But I will often go back and just go, oh, what am I missing? Or what do I need to look at again? Or what? Sometimes it's just reading through the top 200 going, yeah, I've got that. That's great. Yeah, I've got that. That's great. It's like memory lane. Well, Saturday, 2 weeks ago, I opened it up. I'm like, oh, yeah, I don't have that one. It's been on my radar for like 5 years, and it's like it's quite expensive, and it's quite an investment in time. I'm like, yeah, I won't do that. And Saturday night, I went, yeah, you know, I'll let's think about that. And that's Zaya Legends of the Drift. Hang on one second. Zaya Legends of a Drift system, which is basically an outer space pick up and deliver, where you start with a tiny ship and you build your ship and you add other things to it and you fill your cargo hold and you go around doing great little space piratey things, and then the game ends a little while later. Well, Zaya Legends of a Drift system is a 3-player game, and if you can get your hands on Embers of a Fallen Star, which is an expansion, it's got a solo mode. So I went, all right, well, let's see. Well, Embers of a Fallen Star, can't get it anywhere. Can't get it anywhere in Australia. Forget it. Can't get it anywhere. Can't even get it on eBay I think I could get it on eBay for $120 for an expansion, which is basically a deck of cards. I'm like, fuck that shit. So anyway, I was able to find it. Far Off Games, which is the publisher, which is owned and operated by Cody Miller, who's the designer of Zaya, has a web shop. And so I hopped on their web shop, and I'm like, there it is. Embers of Fallen Star. Fantastic. And they had a local warehouse that was selling their stuff. I think, spoiler alert, it's Etherworks, because I'd looked at Etherworks, and Etherworks was out of stock, so I didn't put two and two together. So anyway, I ordered Zaya, and then from Far Off Games, I ordered Embers of a Fallen Star. And I'm like, fuck, that's great. That's great. So great. You know, I woke up Sunday morning. I'm like, oh, look. Look at all these confirmations in my inbox of what I purchased last night. Let's go down memory lane and see what Hammers did last night after a bottle and a half of wine. And I bought Zaya. I'm like, oh, well, look, Zaya, great game. Wonderful. Happy days. So, yeah, Zaya, bought Zaya. That's great. Later that week, we're going back last week, you know, Zaya delivers. I'm like, oh, that's really awesome. Zaya's delivered. That's great. Pop that in the bunker. Put that in. It looks tasty. Delicious. Delicious little solo game. Fantastic. And then, you know, Tuesday comes, Wednesday comes, Thursday comes, and I get an email from Far Off Games going, look, I'm really sorry, but our Australian center is out of stock. So I'm going to refund your purchase, and I just really sorry to let you down. And yeah, so have a great day, enjoy our games. Really nice, super professional. He just said, look, our warehouse had miscounted how many they had left, and we thought we had some in stock, and we do not. And I'm like, oh, crap balls. Now I have this game that I have purchased, and I can't play. So I sat on it for a day, and then I thought, well, I'll get some advice. So I wrote Far Off Games. I think it's Far Off Games. Let me make sure I've got that right. Far Off Games. I wrote Far Off Games. Most recently of Aridia, The Paths We Dare Tread, which has taken the, you know, gaming by storm with their great big huge box of campaign, which is also sold out everywhere. And I wrote and I said, oh, hey, look, have you got any advice? Because here's my situation. I bought Zaya mostly for solo play. I play a lot of solo games. I've been really keen on Zaya for a long time, and I decided to take the plunge. And I can't get Embers of a Fallen Star anywhere in Australia. Cannot. And just any advice, if you've got one in the US, maybe you can let me know what it's going to cost to ship from there so I can consider it. Really appreciate it. Thanks for your time. And look, just would love to hear if you've got any advice. And if not, well, that's I'll deal with it. So listen, and I debated with myself on whether or not to tell this story because I don't want, not that, you know, by and large, I think the gaming culture and gaming people, we're the best fucking people on the planet. And I thought, I don't want Cody Miller, who I was talking to at that point, who's the designer of Zaya. And I didn't put two and two together until the 11th hour. I was like, hey, Cody, blah, 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 listen, you know. And anyway, I get an email back 10 minutes later with a shipping notification for UPS. And I'm like, oh, wow, okay, damn, that was great. So for Embers of Fallen Star, shipping out of the US. And I get another email 2 minutes after that. It said, hey, James, really sorry you're struggling to find, you know, find Embers of Fallen Star. It's in the mail today. On us. And I went, I've misread something here. There's like, I've been in business. I've run my own business, right? Like I've run businesses. I've given stuff away, but not an $85 expansion, right? So anyway, I read the email like 3 or 4 times and an hour and a half later, I'm like, no, I'm going to write back. And I said, hey, Cody, sorry, I think I've misunderstood. Can you let me know how to pay for this game? And he wrote me back and he just said, dude, I want you to enjoy the game and nothing makes me happier. I think he was just having a good day. And this is a game company that sent me an expansion free of charge. And I begged him to let me pay. Right now, I hope this doesn't come back to bite me that Cody doesn't start getting emails going, hey, here you're giving away free expansion. So please just note that that's not what this is about. But I'll tell you what. I have had more positive customer service experiences in board gaming than negative. When I've been missing a piece, it's been sent free of charge. When I've been, I've been missing a piece and then I've written to a company and gone, hey, I'm missing this piece. And I found it later and felt like a total shit heel. And they've still like written them back and they go, no, it's all right. We've actually sent you a pack of 4 different ones. And if you consider them spares. So the cautionary tale is this. Don't shop when you've had too much red wine, people. Well, okay. Don't shop on Saturday night Hammers. That's the cautionary tale. It had a happy ending. Well, that part did. Because it turns out I also bought Zombicide Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Because I love me some turtles. And I also bought Zombicide Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which is part of the recent White Death campaign. I was very excited. Thank you to Games Empire and Castle Hill. Came very quickly. Shipped, I think I got it by Tuesday. I was like, woo! Got to the bunker. I'm like, Wednesday, I'm going to open it up. I'm going to play this. I'm like, And those of you that play Zombicide know where I'm going with this. You need Zombicide White Death, the core box, to play Zombicide Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. God damn it! Mother freaking dog! Just Prince Bar! Yeah. So we're back to that. We're back to do not shop on Saturday night. Period. On a side note, I gave away 6 games this weekend. I had some games. They were secondhand games as well. Unless they're like out of print or hard to find, the resale value on them is trash. These are games that were well loved. They've been in my collection for ages. One of them came over with me from Canada. That was the original Lord of the Rings wrist game. And it had a real, not real gold, but a gold metal ring in it. I think the modern day one comes with a plastic one. It was really quite nice. The box was seen a lot of wear. I just put it up on one of our local pages and said, hey, can anybody use these games? And I go, hey, man, I'll take those. If he wants to try and sell them, good luck. I tried to sell them for several months and I just gave them away. Felt good. My board game account's pretty flush. My incoming roster's pretty flush. So they all went to new home. And this week's clap, of course, goes to Cody Miller. Please do not email Cody Miller asking for free games because he's a super nice dude. I just want to say there's super nice dudes out there. And my cautionary tale had a happy ending. Big clap. This is not a canned one. This is from me, brother. Fuck yeah, you made my day. As of recording this, it is less than 2 weeks to PAX Australia. Lou and I will be there Friday and Saturday. We have already started building our playlist for the road. If you're there, say hello. Lock me in for an after hours midweight euro. Love me a midweight euro. You can reach me on all the socials. Find me on Facebook by searching One Man Clapping. You can join the One Meal Clapping. That sounds delicious. You can join the One Man Clapping Guild on BGG. Subscribe to Guild 4426. And you can help me by dropping me a like on Facebook or Instagram or leaving me a review. It would be great. If you don't want to, don't do it. It's your life, your choices. I'm going to keep talking either way. This week's episode has been brought to you by the impending joy of a 9-hour road trip. PAX is 893 kilometers from home, and I love every minute of that road. Thank you, as always, for your time. Your time is precious, and the fact that you chose to waste an hour of it listening to how I spend my time is always humbling. Until next time, get your game on, even if you got to play with yourself. And remember, painting minis is still board gaming. All your unpainted minis are just there, waiting for you, staring at you in all their gray fucking glory. Peace out, mofos. Locked in the bunker, shadows shaking. One man clapping, secrets awake. Board games living, dice they break. Echoes pounding, hearts they quake.